Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Mulman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. We've got a decent bit to talk about tonight. Of course, the government shutdown is on the list. It obviously is. We're no closer to an answer here, as far as I can tell. But before we get into all that, of course, I'd like to mention the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And you can call in, and if you want to just listen that way, you can. But if you'd also like to talk, you have to wait until you're prompted and then press the 1 key to be placed into the queue. Before we get into anything too serious, I always like to do the political rhetoric generator. And tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is as follows. My opponent is palling around with Al-Qaeda insurgents, corporate executives, and violent criminals. Always love the political rhetoric generator. Boy, let's see here. Some other miscellaneous things that went on this week, just sillinesses and little things and whatever. Ron Paul's 1979 Chevette is for sale. And there was a thing posted about this and how he bought this in 1979 when he went to Congress, and he bought a car so he could get around, and there was some pretty funny things about all that. And anyhow, the point is that his car, which apparently has 69,000 miles on it or so, has been sitting in a garage for 10 years. I'm guessing that it's going to need some help because, well, first of all, it's a 1979 Chevette, and second of all, because it's been sitting for a decade. And for those that don't know, when you have a car sit around for a decade, things tend to dry rot and whatnot. But if you are interested in Congressman Ron Paul's 1979 Chevette, it is for sale. And I have no idea. Let's see here. The highest bid so far is about $5,500 as of a few days ago. And you have to get your pledge in by October 15th if you would like to get in on the bidding. Some other interesting news this week. Nationally, the Silk Road Exchange, and this was a site that basically anything went, right? Anybody could buy anything using bitcoins, and it was kind of a black market underground website using bitcoins. The founder was busted this week on a number of charges. The one that was the most disconcerting was the one about trying to hire a hitman, which that's kind of a big deal. The thing is shut down, though. Lots of people unhappy, and, of course, people who were mid-transaction. In other words, things were sent, but money hasn't been sent or whatever. We're obviously kind of left in the lurch on that due to the abrupt shutdown of the Silk Road site. I should really get to this later. Let me put this over here. Sorry, I had an interesting week. It's been busy, 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 and work's just been killing me. So I apologize. My real job keeps me pretty busy anyway, and this past week it's been extraordinarily busy. So a little bit disorganized tonight, but that's all right. We'll get through it, no problem. One of the other sillinesses that happened in the past week or so is that the Northern Kentucky Health Board, and it's reported wrong here, but it's the Northern Kentucky Independent Health District is what they are, has endorsed a statewide smoking ban. Now, the health district had pushed or helped push for a three-county smoking ban up here in Northern Kentucky. Boy, how long ago has that been now? That was 2009 when that happened, as I recall. Because 2010 were the elections that the ramifications of all of that were felt. The smoking ban effort failed here in Northern Kentucky for the most part. We were successful in getting Boone County to bow out completely. Campbell County passed a full ban, but then it was repealed immediately as soon as elections happened, because the people that pushed for the full ban did not get reelected, and the people who did get elected in their place promised that their first course of action would be to repeal the smoking ban, and they held true to that. The county, Kenton County, had a what's called a restaurant ban put in place, but they had kind of a weird setup on that, and it's all kind of strange and hard to explain, but the short answer is the smoking ban nannies went back to Lexington with their tail between their legs, and the health department up here got a rude awakening that they're not people up here really don't care what they have to say. And so there's been talk that the Northern Kentucky Health Independent Health District was going to try to regulate in a smoking ban, like they've done in Bullitt County, and where they've expanded legislative bans in other counties like Clark and whatnot, where they've added the e-cigarettes to existing smoking bans. And the Bullitt County thing is still in court, and it's still churning away, and who knows if they'll ever get around to ruling on that stuff. I haven't heard anything out of that in a while. The real problem is that the smoking bans, and we've been over this on the show lots of times, you know, the smoking bans are just not going to solve problems. They just create new ones. The smoking bans are a huge violation of rights, both from the property owner's rights and what the papers never, ever decide to quote me on this part of it. They'll quote me on the property rights of the business owner. But it's also a violation of free association and free assembly, where people can gather in a place where the property owner agrees to allow an activity to occur, and they are violating that ability. If the owner wants to allow smoking and the people want to smoke, then by preventing that, you are violating an individual right to free association and free assembly. And, you know, to really compound the whole thing and to really get to what these pro-smoking ban nannies are all about is the ridiculous push for bans on e-cigarettes. Now, you've heard here probably in the last 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month ago, there was a supposed e-cigarette inhaler that exploded, that the batteries exploded. Well, it turns out that one was a homemade e-cigarette inhaler. Now, quite honestly, I don't think I'd make one of those myself. They're not that expensive in the grand scheme of things, and that's kind of crazy. And so, yeah, the batteries got hot and they exploded. And, I just wouldn't do that. I don't know who or why you would want to do that. But somebody created a homemade one. That's what exploded. There's been, as far as I'm aware, and based on the research I've done, no incidents of any of the over-the-counter e-cigarette devices having any sort of malfunction like that. There have been a couple of reported cases where there were contaminants in the e-cigarette juice, as they call it, the nicotine liquid that is put into these inhalers. But those results have never been able to be replicated. And so, you know, part of science in general, right, is not only being able to get a result, but it being able to also replicate that result. And to date, there's been no ability to replicate. You know, the e-cigarette stuff is just silly. In part, it's silly on multiple fronts. First of all, it's silly because it's a zero-tolerance thing, and anything zero-tolerance is just silly. I mean, and we'll get to some of that here in a minute, or more of the zero-tolerance silliness. But on top of it, you know, there's absolutely no proof whatsoever that anyone else at all could even in any way, shape, or form be remotely harmed by somebody using an e-cigarette inhaler. There's no secondhand smoke. There's none of that stuff. And there's absolutely no evidence, despite millions of dollars being spent, that e-cigarettes are in any way, shape, or form dangerous to any non-primary user. So, in other words, anybody around the person actually using it. Yet the pro-ban nannies want it banned. And they will throw out all kinds of things like, well, man, you know, those things were made in China. I don't know. I mean, I don't trust stuff from China. Really? Okay, well, 90% of the crap you buy probably is from China. So I guess you're going to ban all that stuff too? Hmm? That's not a reason for a ban. And then they'll quote, well, you know, these haven't been evaluated by the FDA. Well, whoopity-doo-dah. Personally, I don't need my entire life approved by government in order for me to go, oh, well, I can't do that. It hasn't been approved by government. Some government agency, some three-letter government agency hasn't approved it. Well, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. Oh, my gosh. That's not how people think. And honestly, if you ask people if they really need every single thing in their life approved by a government agency, they're, of course, going to tell you no. And the reality is, what's going on here, part of the smoking ban movement, part of the nannies, is truly offended by anything that looks like smoking. I mean, they're actually offended by anything that looks like smoking. The other half realize where the money's coming from. And where the money is coming from for the pro-ban movement, for the most part, is from the pharmaceutical companies that sell the gums, the patches, the psychotropic drugs that screw with people's heads to make them want to quit smoking or not want to have a cigarette or whatever, things like Chantix and things like that. You know, these are all the people that are funding the pro-ban movement. And, you know, I don't necessarily blame the corporations per se for funding that. I do and I don't. Certainly, you know, from their perspective, you know, trying to quit smoking does increase when there's a new smoking ban put into place. Not about success, but people do try, in a large percentage try. And, of course, then if you've got the corner on the market of the smoking cessation drugs, then you stand to benefit significantly with a good percentage of an area trying to quit smoking. There's financial incentive there for them to back that movement financially. So now with e-cigarettes being introduced and there being no single monopoly control over who can make an e-cigarette, the people that are in charge of these gums and patches and all these drugs are very, very upset. And, you know, in some ways I understand they're upset because they had to go through this rigmarole, FDA, blah, 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 blah. And they're kind of upset that the same rules haven't applied to e-cigarettes. I personally would have said that they shouldn't have had to gone through that EPA, or not EPA, but FDA rigmarole. You know, if they've done the testing and they know that it works, then, you know, what else do you need? But anyway, that's their beef. You know, my big problem with it more than anything is that you're basically buying legislation. You know, in Bullitt County, one of the main legislators that's been pushing the statewide smoking ban for some time, she got a free monster billboard in Bullitt County from the UK Center for Tobacco Free Studies, which is where all the money for the pro-ban movement comes into Kentucky. It all gets funneled through a group at UK, through the UK Department of Nursing, or Nursing Department or whatever. And they put up this monster billboard. And, of course, it didn't say vote for Linda Belcher, but what it said was, thanks, Linda Belcher, for defending something, 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 you know, and it was real big, thanks, Linda Belcher, with a big picture of her, and then everything else was smaller and smaller and smaller as it went down. And, of course, this just happened to go up, you know, during the election. And, you know, to me and to anybody who has a clue, it was very obvious what was going on. And it was definitely pushing a line when it comes to campaign finance. And that's a big deal. Now, Belcher did get defeated anyway, so that all worked out. And, in fact, a lot of the folks that push for these smoking bans are either in super safe legislative districts. In other words, you know, Jesus himself couldn't walk in and win that race, or they get beat, one or the other. And that seems to be the trend. We've been very successful at getting public support against people who push the smoking bans. as they should be, because they're not pushing them for any real reason. If you ask, you try to get into a very in-depth conversation with the legislators that push the smoking ban, and they don't want to debate it. They just don't like smoke, and they just think it's good for them politically to be involved in it on that side. But the reality is, you know, the zero tolerance stuff with the e-cigarettes and all that stuff really hurts their credibility. Up here in Northern Kentucky, they said they wanted a complete ban or no ban at all. In other words, my way or the highway, we want all or nothing. That's not how politics works anyway. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, it's a zero tolerance thing, right? We want it all or we want nothing. You know, and I just don't think that that's very wise politically. Now, granted, a lot of these people that are pushing these things are bureaucrats, and so they don't have to deal with politics often. They deal in bureaucracy land where everybody just, you know, like a bunch of automatons says, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Okay, let's just do that. And they don't have to go to the voters, and they don't have to push or have to take anything into account other than their own political desires or their own policy desires, I should say. So, and I see we have a caller in a queue here, so let me bring them on. I think they probably are wanting to talk on this topic, but we'll find out. If Blog Talk ever brings them on, caller, you're on the air.
Ken, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Don. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. The news seems to be, you know, the fight over the shutdown. And I've never seen the left so aroused and so screaming about all of this. And I remember, of course, how, you know, when Obama had to back down on the bombing or invasion of Syria, they basically tried to spin it as, well, Obama was just trying to, you know, get Syria to give up its chemical weapons or something like that. And now the left is trying to spin this whole shutdown thing, saying that it'll give the left the opportunity to pick up the House again. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is this. I'm really glad the Republicans are standing up to Obama and all of that, but I'm wondering in terms of the way the people out there are seeing all of this, are they blaming the Republicans or the Democrats, you know, for what's going on?
Well, and I was going to get to this here in just a little bit, too, but I think that what you're seeing at this point, the polls are showing that the average public blames both sides. Both Democrats and Republicans are being blamed for the shutdown. Now, Republicans were getting hit harder at first, right? There was a successful push to blame Republicans, and so the negativity was higher towards Republicans than Democrats initially. What we're seeing now is that the Democrats are catching up, right? The people that are upset with both is equalizing out again, and it continues to go up. And the real cause behind that is this inability or this my way or the highway, again, it's zero tolerance type stuff, my way or the highway attitude that Obama has taken that says, I'm not going to negotiate. And the Republicans have been successful at starting to get that message out that, hey, we're ready to talk. We want to come to the table. You won't come to the table. And, you know, like I said, I've got a bunch more on this coming up, but I really think that the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot, and I really don't think that this in any way, shape, or form is going to benefit them long term. I think that they may have had an initial benefit only from the it didn't hurt them as much as it hurt the Republicans, but it hurt both sides. And what's interesting now, what's really starting to get the drum beating going on now is all this stuff that's been shut down. And I've been on the whole website thing where, I mean, there's a whole bunch of websites that are down for no reason whatsoever. And there's a bunch of information coming out now that it actually costs more to shut the websites down than to have just left them running. And now there's more information coming out about, for instance, the World War II Memorial, where they may have only had one or two people staffing the World War II Memorial for 16 hours a day. Now they've posted 4 to 6 people to keep people out 24/7. So you've almost tripled the number of people actually guarding an outdoor monument that's usually open to the public. And so you're actually spending more money with the shutdown than if it had been, you know, just left as it was. And there's a law that's very specific on what you're allowed to spend money on and what you're not during a shutdown. And part of the law and the spirit of that law is you cannot incur new costs when you're in a shutdown. Well, if you're adding security to keep people out, if you're adding extra costs to shut websites down, if you're adding all these extra costs, it certainly violates the intent of the law. And I've actually talked to at least one congressman now and asked him if he would please start a congressional investigation into this, because it's BS. They are just inflicting pain for the sake of inflicting pain, and they're just doing it to be jerks. They're being little babies, you know.
I agree with you that you're being very logical here. The question is that, you know, the mainstream media and people caught in their own little boxes, are they going to be seeing it this way? I remember how Newt Gingrich dropped the ball in the, I think it was the mid-90s when they had that shutdown. And, you know, the Republicans just completely lost it after that, and they backed down. So I think Obama's getting hysterical because, as you know, we're now facing the whole thing about the debt ceiling. So you put together the debt ceiling and the shutdown, and it just takes the whole thing into a higher gear.
Oh, yeah. The debt ceiling, I think it's October 16th is the deadline on the ceiling.
All right.
And they're already doing extraordinarily measures or whatever, blah, blah, blah. The debt's been frozen for, what is it, 112 days, 114 days, something like that. Our national debt has officially been frozen, which is just a joke. I mean, you know, it's still racking up. They're just putting it in a different bucket for now. But apparently that other bucket fills up on October 16th is the deal with the next set of debt ceiling stuff. And, you know, I guess what's interesting about it to me is I think that the Democrats, some of them anyway, realize what's happening here. And, you know, because Chicago-style politics, they're not idiots. They're kind of evil, but they're not idiots. And the morning that I saw things start to change, the mood start to shift from just leaning more heavily towards Republican anger, you know, to balancing back out, was the morning that Obama started talking about, hey, Wall Street, you know, this isn't going to go away, and this is a big deal, and boy, you know, this is the real deal, and he's basically talking down the economy, and again, trying to inflict even further pain, right? And once I saw that happen, I kind of realized that my gut, in talking to other people and seeing what's going on, that my gut was correct, that the Democrats were starting to see the backlash was equaling back out, and they were not going to gain politically from this like they thought they were.
Well, I also have heard that Wall Street is very concerned themselves, and they are basically, they just want to see some type of compromise immediately. And, of course, a lot of companies on Wall Street, for example, like Goldman Sachs, are very dependent on their agreement with Obama and the RINOs. So they may put pressure on the Republicans themselves. And I'm amazed that to see Boehner and the Republicans have held out for as long as they've had, because I usually don't expect anything from these characters.
Well, my behind-the-scenes sources tell me that the Republican leadership did not want this shutdown, and that they kind of realized that they weren't going to have the control to keep it from happening. And so the shutdown happened, and again, you know, both sides took a beating, but Republicans took a worse beating initially. But as day two, day three, day four got around to happening, day three and day four is kind of where the mood shifted or began to shift, and that was the day that Obama came out in the morning and was talking down the economy. But that was that night was kind of where I started seeing the mood shift. And when, you know, the stories got out about the national parks being shut down for no reason and arbitrarily shutting down, I think I saw it's Mount Vernon got shut down, even though Mount Vernon isn't even publicly owned. It's a private entity that owns Mount Vernon, But the parking lot was half and half paid for by the Park Service. So they shut down access to the entire facility because the Park Service owns half the parking lot. And once these kind of stories came out, that's when things started to turn. Once those stories came out that said they're just doing things arbitrarily to be a pain in the butt, the public is already fed up with this kind of garbage. And that's when I think the mood started to shift. I mean, I'm seeing, and maybe it's a biased thing. I've been kind of busy with work, but based on what I've been able to ascertain with quote-unquote normal people that aren't really paying attention, they're blaming both sides. They're blaming Republicans and Democrats, and they just think they're all a bunch of idiots. I mean, that's the public perception out there. And I think that, and I was going to get to this here in a minute, there's some ramifications and some elections that are happening this year. You know, this is an off year. This is an off year election where it's an odd numbered year. So there's not a lot of elections going on this year. One of the interesting things that I've been following is this governor's race in Virginia.
Right.
And in Virginia, we have, it's a three-way race. There's a Republican, a Democrat, and a Libertarian. And of the three, the Libertarian in the last 4 weeks has been going up and up pretty steadily. And here in the past week, he jumped from 10.8 to 12.7% support. And these are legitimate polls, right? I mean, this isn't just some partisan poll to screw with stuff. I think what we're seeing, in part anyway, is a translation of we're just sick and tired of Republicans and Democrats, and we're sick of their antics and we're sick of their BS. And it's providing an opportunity for alternative candidates to actually have a voice and be heard because people are finally open to it. People are saying, you know what, these guys are morons. I hate these guys. Nobody's
listening.
Do you
find that it's primarily the Tea Party people that are kind of symbolizing all of this?
Maybe. I don't even think it's necessarily all the Tea Party folks. I mean, when you have – so, you know, the shutdown's really happening over Obamacare, right? I mean, at its crux. And the reality is that 52% of Americans oppose Obamacare. So the shutdown being over something that people oppose makes it really hard on Democrats. And that's another thing I think that the Democrats didn't take into account here was that – you know, in the 90s, during the shutdown there, that was a budget thing, right? It was all about, well, we want to spend this, but we don't want to spend this. This is specifically about Obamacare. And the Republicans, I think, have backed off to a very safe position, which is, listen, we don't want to repeal it. We'll talk about that later. Right now, we just want to push off the individual mandate for a year. In other words, we want to push off you being forced into it for a year. And that's the position the Republicans are in now. And once that position happened, that's when the Democrats got very serious about, well, we're not going to negotiate. Because the reality is the majority of Americans, I think, support that position. Hey, you know, this thing's kind of clunky and it's not coming together right. And, oh, my God, I just saw the rates and, boo-hoo, that's not cheap. And I keep hearing all these stories about people with their insurance tripling. And, boy, I'm not sure about this. And, oh, did
if your argumentation if your argumentation is correct, then, Ken, the Republicans want to see the whole thing collapse earlier, especially they want to see it collapse before the midterms, correct?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, that's the funny thing, right, is that they've got them – each side's got themselves in an interesting catch-22, right?
Right.
So – the Republicans would love to let this thing just be implemented because it is going to fall on its face. And we've already seen, you know, and the Democrats have spun it, but, you know, these exchange websites all crashed and burned on day one, right? Too much traffic. Well, there were like 24,000 hits in the first 24 hours, right? 24,000 people. In Kentucky, they spent $52 million of federal money to build the technology side of our exchange website. For $52 million, I can build you a website that can handle 24,000 people on it at the same time. I'm just telling you, $52 million is a lot of freaking money. And they tried to spin it with, oh, well, you know, it was just so popular. I mean, boy, that's why I went down. It's just too popular. But the reality is, and I was playing with the system the night before, you know, just trying to get an idea of what it would cost me. And boy, am I not pleased. It's expensive for me, a lot more. but the point is that the site just isn't built to handle a large number of people on it at any one time. And, you know, if you've got 4.4 million people in the state, let's just assume for the sake of ease, right, it's 1.5 million families, and let's assume that one-third of them want to use the exchange. Well, that means you've got 500,000 people that in theory might want to use this website. You might want to make it be able to handle more than 24,000 people at a time. But anyway, getting back to the point, I think that the Democrats have put themselves in an interesting position because they let the shutdown happen on a program that is not popular with Americans, right? And they've also overreached and shut down things arbitrarily that didn't make any sense, right? Shutting down the parks and things like that was just stupid. And now they've got themselves in a spot where they're saying they won't negotiate. So they've put themselves in a spot where they can't back off without taking egg in the face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Republicans want this thing to fall down and, you know, fall over before the midterms. I agree with your question there that they would prefer it to fall down and go boom before then. But the reality is that once the individual mandate goes into place and the more of it that goes into place, the less likely it's going to be to ever be able to get it back out, right? I mean, once you've got people dependent on a system, it's very hard to get to undo that. So their goal is to stop as much of it as possible. And so you've got two wings within the Republican Party that are at odds, which is the let it fall down and go boom and we get the political gain. And then you have the other side that's saying, no, once this is in place, it'll never be able to be repealed and we'll be stuck with it. And so those are the factions within the Republican Party. But now they've got themselves as a party caught in a – they're not going to be able to back off and say, okay, never mind, screw it, we're done. Because then the shutdown's been for nothing, right? So both sides now have committed and they've dug their heels in. And it's going to be interesting to see who gives because, quite honestly, at this point I don't think either side benefits or loses by either giving in or continuing to dig in their heels. I think the damage has been done. I think that the only people that are still going to take a beating are some of these bureaucracies that are arbitrarily closed. You know, the Census Bureau website's down, for instance. I mean, really? Did the data just cease to exist because there's a shutdown? I mean, it's a static website with a whole bunch of numbers.
Do you think that there's any scenario where Obama will actually take back the health care, which is his greatest achievement of his presidency?
I would argue it's his only one. But, I mean, I agree with you that it's going to be very hard for him to roll that back because, you know, basically this is his legacy. Make no mistake, I agree.
Right, right.
He's not going to get anything else done the next 3 years. He's lame ducked already. Nothing else is really going to get done. That's going to be his legacy. And so certainly he's not going to be in the mood to negotiate. And it's going to be very interesting because, you know, and I did a write-up on this as well, kind of the history of the whole thing. You know, the problem that you have is that everybody's been running over everybody in this process. And so, you know, how it got passed originally was the Democrats got majorities in the House and the Senate, and they got a majority, and they had the White House there from 2008 to 2010, or actually be technically 2009 to 2011. They owned it all. And once they were putting Obamacare through, they basically crushed it through. When the Republicans objected, they were gaveled down. When they tried to put amendments on it, they were thrown out. They weren't even considered, or they were voted straight down. You know, and then there was a special election where Ted Kennedy died, and you know they got another senator, and then it made it so there wasn't enough votes in the Senate, and so they just went with a Senate bill that had flaws. And they just crushed this thing through any way they could. They just smashed it in, and they basically steamrolled the Republicans. So after that. Anytime a bill, apparently, my understanding is, anytime a bill of such sweeping ramifications gets crushed through or put through in general, there's technical problems with the bill, right? And there are technical changes that have to occur. The Republicans, because it was basically crammed down their throat, have basically rejected any and all attempts to modify or to fix Obamacare in the places where things were broken and are known to be broken. They just have, and honestly, they have no incentive to do so. The thing was forced in on top of them. Their constituency doesn't want it. And hell, over half of Americans don't want it. So why are they going to be seen as, oh, well, who wants to be the guy that saves Obamacare in the Republican Party? I mean, nobody wants to be that guy, right? And so they have no incentive to fix the problem. So what you've got is the thing was crammed in, it's got issues, and Republicans have refused to fix it because Democrats steamrolled it over them to begin with. So that leads to now, the whole attitude is we're just going to steamroll. And this whole thing, this whole bill, this whole thing, the whole broader topic has been about steamrolling the opposition. And that's what we're seeing now. Is now we've got two steamrollers just nose to nose, and I don't know who's going to give. I don't think anybody is. It's going to be very interesting. You know, the Republicans have been putting forth, very intelligently, by the way, all these other continuing resolutions basically funding everything except for Obamacare. And then when they specifically defunded Obamacare. Then when they rejected that, they started doing piecemeal stuff. Well, then the Democrats said, we're not going to do it piecemeal. We're going to do it all or nothing. Well, then the Republicans started passing things like the Save the Children Act. And, you know, I mean, not really that, but you know what I mean? It, stuff about, you know, funding for studying for crazy children's diseases and feeding the elderly and paying our veterans. And, I mean, they're pushing these very popular things. And the Democrats are saying, no, 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 we're not going to do anything without the complete and total continuing resolution. Well, what that does is it puts the Democrats, the elected Democrats, in a really bad position because when it comes to being in a primary or in a general election next year, right, they're going to have competition that comes up and says, hey, man, this guy voted against paying the veterans. This guy voted against, you know, helping kids with crazy diseases, right? And it doesn't matter what the facts are, right? They're going to have some ad. They're going to say, didn't stand up for veterans, and they'll have, you know, some vote with a date behind it, you know, on the screen, right? And they'll have some picture of a guy in a military uniform, you know, or a hat or whatever. That's the typical stuff. And Don, I just looked at the time, and we were way, way over here. Can you hang on through the break?
Well, thanks for yeah, I'll talk
or
to you.
Or that's all right. Okay, hang on a second. Let me get through the break here real quick, folks. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network, and we're way, 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 way over for a break. We're going to take a quick one, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network. Back in a few.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. It is Sunday night. We're here live every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and we enjoy when people call in. And thanks, Don, for calling in. I talked to Don in the break. He had to go, but thank you for calling in. We've got about 15 minutes left, but if you'd like to call in, the number here is 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And before we get back on to the topic that we were talking about, the shutdown, there were a couple other zero-tolerance things that I wanted to talk about real quick, because some of this is crazy. Right now, the EPA is starting to crack down on wood-burning fireplaces, and they are trying to set pollution standards on individual wood-fired fireplaces. And, you know, I have to really question, how much do wood-fired fireplaces that individuals have really contribute to any sort of pollution whatsoever? I mean, first of all, most people don't have a wood-fired fireplace anymore. And so this seems like it's just some sort of arbitrary, annoying regulation. It's a zero-tolerance thing. And a lot of times these guys, because they're just empowered to do whatever the heck they want, don't think this stuff through. Just like with the smoking ban people and e-cigarettes and all that, they're not thinking this stuff through. The reality is that, and I'd love to see numbers, but I'm guessing that there is absolutely negligible pollution created from wood-fired fireplaces. I just don't see it. And what this means, though, is that if you upgrade your wood-fired fireplace, you're not supposed to sell your existing fireplace to anyone else because it no longer meets the EPA regulations. And it's just like, really? I mean, really? That's your concern? Oh, okay. And then you have other sillinesses with these zero tolerance policies where I just saw a story about a kid who brought fishing equipment to school, and because one of the things in the tackle box was a fillet knife, he got charged with having a weapon at school. It's a felony charge, and he can face 2 to 10 years in prison and a $10,000 fine for accidentally leaving your tackle box in your car. You're really going to give this kid a felony? I mean, really? These zero-tolerance policies are zero-thought policies. They make absolutely no sense. I got into a discussion a few nights ago online about the DUI laws and the drop from 0.10 to 0.08. Now there's talk about dropping to 0.05 for blood alcohol. And obviously, I don't like drunk driving. I don't do it myself, and I have called in my share of drunk drivers when they're very obviously impaired. The point, though, is that DUI fatalities don't tend to happen until well over 0.08 blood alcohol content, right? The people that get people hurt primarily are in the 0.12 to 0.16, and the average is 0.16 for DUI fatalities, which is pretty significant if you think about it, because it's like 0.3 something or other is when you start to black out, so or pass out. So the point is that these zero tolerance policies don't take common sense into account. And so what you're going to end up with is people getting felony DUI convictions for having a beer or two, being absolutely fine behind the wheel. Why are you destroying lives? Whether it's the guy who had a couple of beers, is not really intoxicated at all, perfectly safe to drive. Why are you going to give that guy a life sentence of not being able to get a good job? The kid with the fishing equipment in his car, he had a fillet knife, very obvious what it's for, in his tackle box. It makes absolutely no sense to destroy this kid's life because he wants to go into the military, and he won't be able to go into the military with a felony on his record. Why are you destroying his life? Why are you doing all these things that make no sense? Zero tolerance policies do not work. Period. They make no sense. It's an overreaction. That's what these zero tolerance policies are. Overreaction. And overreactions are often worse than the initial action to which is being reacted to. I said that wrong, but whatever, you know what I mean. The point is that the overreaction is worse than the initial action. And that's what we're seeing. Whether it's the EPA banning wood-fired fireplaces that don't have some sort of filtration device on them or whatever, whether it's the smoking ban nannies getting rid of e-cigarettes because they don't like how it looks, it offends them, whatever the reason, this stuff makes no freaking sense. It's stupid. And more people are getting it, and they're fed up with this garbage. And this has been happening for some time. We've talked about this on this show for a period of time, that people are just getting sick of this BS. They're just sick of it. And then to have the shutdown start to happen, right? The shutdown starting to happen is causing even more dissatisfaction. Now, I'm looking at this Virginia race, and I mentioned it before, the governor's race in Virginia, where the Libertarian candidate has been going up consistently in the polls, but here in the last week has shot up, that would be 20% almost from where he was the week before. And the reason for that, I believe, is because of the shutdown and the stupidity and the continued stupidity of the powers that be, the establishment politicians. And if you look at where, and it's funny that I've been watching this race, and there's a lot of Republicans bemoaning, oh, well, you're taking our votes, which, you know, we always get that from Republicans or Democrats. And I'm actually looking at a story right now where the Democrats are bemoaning that the Libertarian is taking their votes away, which is hilarious, right? You have both Republicans and Democrats saying, you're stealing our votes. I hate that phrase. Can't steal votes until after they're cast. Your vote belongs to you. The data coming out of this poll here suggests that where Sarvis gets his support, 58% of his support come from people who are not Democrats or Republicans, 58%. So he's picking up independents or libertarians or other third parties. He's getting 22% of his support comes from Democrats, and the other 21% comes from Republicans. So basically, it's a wash as far as taking votes from Democrats or Republicans. He's drawing from the independents, and those are the people, and I've been telling you guys on this show for months that the independents, and I've said it on Ed's show during the week. I don't think I've said it on Dale's, but the point is, other shows on the network, when I've come on to those other shows, I've said the exact same thing, and I always beat this mantra. The independents, the people in the middle, the ones that actually decide elections, are the ones that are fed up with this garbage. They are fed up. That is where libertarians, independents, and independent-minded Democrats and Republicans can gain support if they quit talking negative garbage and start talking about solutions, if they use common sense and apply it to their campaigns and to their platforms. That is the new frontier. That's what's going to be coming electorally in 2014, and to a more limited extent, because there's just not that many elections this year, in 2013. That is where Sarvis, the Libertarian candidate in Virginia, is picking up his support. I guarantee you it's where he's picking up his support. It's from the people who have thrown up their hands and said, Democrats and Republicans are both morons. That is where they're picking up their support. And if you, as a Democrat or Republican, listening to this show, if you want those people, you got to start thinking outside the box. You got to quit listening to your party establishment leaders, and you got to start doing the right thing for voters. That is what will garner those votes. One thing Don found before he left during the break, he mentioned to me that there's a study that shows that basically it's a wash, right? It's basically Democrats and Republicans are both taking an equal beating over this. But the study that he found said that actually Democrats are taking a slightly bigger beating than the Republicans are at this point. And I think that that's probably correct. This arbitrary shutdown of the national parks and stupid things like the shutdown of Mount Vernon, where the parking lot is co-owned by the Park Service, but everything else is privately done, and the Park Service blocking access to Mount Vernon because of the parking lot being half-owned by the Park Service, is absolutely ridiculous. The World War II monument, I assume everybody heard about that. There's been new information that came out that shows that that's not even quote-unquote guarded 24 hours a day normally. And it's only one or two people during daytime shifts that are even there at the monument. Now they've got four, five, six people guarding it 24/7 to make sure people don't run the barricades. They're actually spending more money to keep people out. And, of course, all the website stuff. I started railing on the website stuff as soon as that garbage started happening. I think I was probably courtesy of a buddy of mine out in the 1st Congressional District way out west near Paducah. I had been beating the drum on the websites that were arbitrarily shut down from the get-go and about how it's actually costing them more money. And some of these things are just stupid. Like NASA, if you know the back way into a website in NASA, if you have a subdomain or whatever, you know, NASA.gov redirects to, oh, sorry, we're closed. But if you go to, I think it's like solarsystem.NASA.gov or something like that, it's all still there. It's all there. They're just trying to cause pain. And there's actually a term for this. It's called the Washington Monument Syndrome. It's also known as the Mount Rushmore Syndrome or the Fireman First Principle. And it's a tactic that's taken by taxing entities that when they don't get what they want, they shut down the things that annoy the crap out of the public just to annoy the public. And to try to force the public to support their lame-brained whatever plan just to end the pain. In Ohio, they have these tax levies for school districts. And if the school district doesn't get their tax levy, they don't cut the after-school underwater basket weaving courses. They don't cut the stupid, frivolous garbage that's after-school programs. They cut buses. They cut the busing. Why do they cut the busing? Because it's what causes the parents the most pain. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. But that's what they're doing. And they're doing everything they can. Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul were caught on a hot mic talking about this very thing. That was 3 days ago now. And everybody made a big deal out of it. They were exactly right what they were talking about. Rand was 100% on target. He said, you know, I'm just repeating that we're willing to negotiate. And so long as the Democrats keep beating this, we will not negotiate stuff, they're taking a bigger beating. And I 100% agree with that. Because in reality, political reality is people want compromise. That's the reality of politics. They want our elected officials to compromise. And when they fail to compromise, that's when you see things like we've got now, which is that people are just dissatisfied with both sides of the argument because there's no compromise. And as long as the Democrats are out saying we will not compromise, they're going to take more of a beating than the Republicans will for the initial shutdown, no matter how it's explained. And I love how Rand says, I don't think they poll tested this we will not negotiate stuff. I bet they didn't, because if they had, they wouldn't be doing it. It's absolutely insane. And now Boehner's doubled down on it and said that the House will not pass a bill to reopen the government until Obama agrees to negotiate. And they're just piling on this. The White House will not negotiate stuff, and it's going to hurt the Democrats really, really bad. It's actually amazing And based on my sources, this was not planned by the Republicans. This was not the plan. They just stumbled into this, which is fine by me. It's just hilarious the whole way this is working out. I just found this again. Solarsystem.nasa.gov is absolutely the way to get around their stupid site block, and it's still legit and still there. It's just, and the World War II memorial thing provided such an opportunity. The RNC now is supposedly trying to pony up the cash to pay for the security at the World War II memorial, and it'll keep it open for 30 days, which is hilarious because it's just more. That's smart politics. I just, it's hilarious. And we've only got about a couple minutes left here, but one of the stories out on Gawker.com, the 10 Republicans who shut down the government. Dun, dun, dun. And one of them is that's listed is Thomas Massie. Thomas Massie is the 4th Congressional District Representative. He's my Congressional District Representative. And they basically outline that, well, you know, he doesn't care about getting reelected. And he doesn't listen to these special interest groups. Oh, my gosh, that's horrible. And it's like, wow, that's kind of an interesting take on things because for the most part, what you hear from the public is we don't want people that are only worried about their own reelection, and we don't want people that listen to special interest groups. But Thomas Massie doesn't, and now he's considered a threat. Dun, 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 dun. I think that's hilarious. And they don't even realize that's what the American public wants. They don't want politicians who listen to special interests that worry more about their reelection than what their constituents want. And I would argue that in the 4th Congressional District especially, Thomas Massie is doing exactly what the majority of the people in the 4th Congressional District want. I've been monitoring his Facebook page. The only people condemning him are people from California and Chicago and there were New York and a couple of other liberal bastions. No one from the 4th Congressional District was pounding Thomas Massie. Everyone from the district was like, keep up the good work, dude. And we're running out of time, but, man, I'll tell you, this is going to be interesting. I don't know how much longer it's going to last. The longest one in history was the one in the 90s that lasted, I think I saw, for 12 days. I think Wikipedia said 12 days. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, it's there, and we have very little time left. So I got to run. But, folks, please tune in again next week. Thanks for tuning in. Listen to the other shows on the network. They're all good. They're all unique. They're all their own thing. Same place, just different day of the week. Until next week, folks, have a good week. And this has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.